Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome along to Bunty's Boxing Podcast. What a week it's been since the Carl Froch-George Groves fight. We're going to have a look at a couple more tasty ones as well, not least Tony Bellew in Canada to fight Adonis Stevenson. We're also going to look at Derek Chisora's return to the ring as well. Bunty, you well? Busy week?
It's been a busy 2 weeks. I've got to tell you, Lee, the last 10 or so days reminds me of the stuff that used to happen back in the 90s. And I'm not a person to gaze back in history, but it reminds me of the Ben fights. It reminds me of Naz's big fights. When a domestic squabble, when a fight involving a British fighter in Britain, not one of those Ricky Hatton or Lennox Lewis escapades in Vegas, but when a British world title fight involving a British boxer captures the back and the front pages, sometimes for the right reasons, but most often for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I mean, the fight itself was sensational. It was just absolutely brilliant. I mean, last week on the podcast, I held my hands up, self-confessed Froch admirer, love the kind of warrior spirit. I mean, to see him going down in that first round from such a thunderous punch, and then to kind of, then just to start wading through more and more right hands to get to that ninth round when we looked like we were going to have some sort of rocky finish. Now, yeah. Bunty, you know, keyboard warriors are out there, and you know, everything's black and white. Everything's Froch is a complete sham. He's no sort of fighter. Groves is the greatest thing since sliced bread. This was circumstance, not conspiracy.
Well, not only was it not conspiracy, it was boxing. It's what happened, and it's been hard looking for voices of reason, both not just within the online community, but within the so-called professional community. I read half a dozen reports on Monday and Sunday in national newspapers with guys completely not understanding the rules. So trust me, it's not just confined to online keyboard warriors. I tried to sum this up, and it's been a bit hard. I had to distance myself, but there's one thing I do, Lee, when I watch a fight live. When I write about it or talk about it, I don't watch the fight again to become a genius, to become a second guesser.
Yeah.
There's no Sky Plus inside my brain. So when I did my report for The Independent and my column on ESPN, I still hadn't watched the fight because I wanted to work from my notes and my memory, because that way I was like the fans watching it, the men in the ring, the corner men, and more importantly, the third man, the referee. And this is the kind of conclusion I came up with. I came up with three things, quite simple. First of all, that hopefully George Groves and his people will acknowledge that he does stumble off the ropes and he's clearly not in control of any part of his body for a couple of seconds. Secondly, and this is really important, that Carl Froch and his people need to realize that he has not connected with anywhere near as many punches in that last 30 seconds as he thinks he has. And thirdly, Howard Foster, the referee, who's a terrific referee, was in the wrong position. So if those three people could hold their hands up and admit that, we might get closer to some kind of resolution. If the three of them continue with the, I was okay, as Groves says, and Froch says, I was bashing him up, which he says, and Howard Foster, or the board have said on Howard Foster's position, his handling was perfect. It was terrific, not perfect because of that last 5 seconds when he's in a bad position. If those three people all held their hands up and admitted that perhaps it wasn't as black and white as they said, then maybe we'll move on. But they're not going to, and this is going to rage and rage and rage. I've already spoken to people, right? I've spoken to people who I know didn't see the fight. When I've challenged them, they didn't see the fight. So they're basing it on what they've seen, a snippet on breakfast TV, a snippet on radio, a snippet over someone's shoulder looking at someone's paper, which is good and bad for boxing. It's good because it's high profile, and it's bad because most of the so-called new fans are thinking, oh, that was a fix. God, that was a fix. Anyway, Lee, I promised you 12 minutes ago I wouldn't talk about the fight for more than a minute. And that's yet another lie, yet another conspiracy.
Can I just ask you two more questions, Bunty?
Of course you can.
Who would have won the fight had that not happened, do you think?
If the referee hadn't jumped in, George would have, I think, been pummeled and fallen over to the floor. He would have regained his feet and maybe cleared his head. If he'd have faffed around, he might have just got through that round But I think then Carl would have got to him. If he didn't get to him in the 10th, 11th and 12th, that round would have turned the scores around anyway. So Carl would have gone into the 10th round, a point up on two cards and down by 3 points on the other card. Carl would have stayed on his feet to either win on points or get to George in the 10th round. That's what I think. I think if George had allowed his momentum to take him, I think he was heading to fall over and go down.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he would have been hurt. Once he's on the floor, that probably takes us to 135, 140. He could have fiddled a little bit. He may have just got through the round, maybe.
Yeah. And the other question is, the bookies have priced up a rematch, whether it happens or not. And they've still got Carl Froch as the odds-on favourite. A bigger price than he was. He's around the 2-1 on mark. He was 1-4. Who wins a rematch?
Well, you know what? If they had a rematch, I have a feeling that George would win a rematch, and that's why I don't think there will be a rematch. I tell you what, I don't know what the bookies' odds are on Carl never fighting again, but I'd have a tenner on it.
Really?
Carl's a sensible man.
Yeah.
He knows if his reactions are a fraction slower. Mm. He knows if his punch resistance is a fraction less. He knows all of those things, and he'll be weighing it up. And also, it wasn't bravado from Carl and his people. They genuinely didn't think George Groves was in their class. They've had a dreadful wake up.
I think most of us have, to be fair. I mean, not yourself and not a few others, but I'll hold my hands up and say I was genuinely surprised at how good Groves was. And if he can last the 12 in future, then he's going to be a world champion one day.
The fight went exactly how I said it would, apart from the knockdown.
Yeah, yeah, true.
If everything I thought would happen. I thought George might survive to the bell and just hold on and lose a narrow, and I said controversial decision. That was my gut thing. Or Carl would get him in the last 3 rounds. But all bets are off because I didn't have the knockdown. I'm big enough to say. I didn't have the shattering, catastrophic knockdown in the first round. And anybody that tipped Carl to win in 9 rounds and can claim they got it right, that you didn't. You won the bet, you didn't get it right.
Yeah, very true, yeah. Very true. Let's have a look at two of these fights this weekend then, shall we? Let's start with the one that Box Nation's showing, Derek Chisora versus Andre Pella. This is for the WBO International Heavyweight title and the vacant WBA International Heavyweight title. Good to see Derek Chisora climbing back up to where he wants to be. 18 wins, 12 by stoppage. He's lost 4 times. He's been stopped once himself. He's fighting this chap out of the Czech Republic whose record sees 32 wins. 22 by stoppage. He's lost 3 times, been stopped twice himself as well. You've got to say that when you look down the respective records, there's not much comparison. That's why Derek Chisora is 14-1 on to win this. Yeah, and Paya's 13-2 to win it. If Derek Chisora's head's right and everything else is right and he comes in good nick, I'm really impressed by him every time I see him, Buncey, I've got to admit.
No, listen, he's turned his life around, Dale, when you think about it. He's lost 4 of his last 8. They've been against good fighters in hard fights. One of them, Helenius, he could have got. They've been good. They've been good. He's learning. He's a better fighter now. He's a different fighter now. He's a switched-on fighter now. And the reason why the WBC have a bauble here and the WBA have a bauble here is quite simple, Lee. Everybody knows that in the next 12 to 18 months, both of the Klitschko's will be gone. Not because they get obliterated by some Tyson-esque fighter coming up the right flank, but simply because of old age, boredom, and a lack of opponents. And also, they don't want to see their legacy spoiled. They've got enough money now, they'll never be able to spend their money, and their relations will never be able to spend their money. They're not American fighters, they're sensible fighters. Vitaly will be 42 next year, and Vladimir's 37. They've got no natural challengers at the moment. So what's going to happen is that 4 titles are going to become available. 4 vacant titles or 4 titles are going to become available. And that doesn't include the regular WBA version and interim versions. Because WBC, remember, Vitaly hasn't fought for it in 14 months. There'll be lots of world title fights coming up in the next 18 months. In fact, I'd go as far to say that the next 18 months will become the busiest ever period in the history of world title fights. And that's because everyone's jockeying. So Chisora's will find himself, when he gets rid of Pala, and we'll come to that in a second, when he gets rid of Pala, he'll find himself in a position to fight for the WBO if it becomes vacant, the WBA if there's a regular slot, the WBC if there's an interim, he'll be in jockeying position. And that's what's happening around the world now. There are 8 heavyweights out there, not including Vitaly and not including Vladimir, who in the next 18 months will find themselves in a world title fight for a version of the title. Derek will be one of them. The reason why he's struggling to find opponents, Pal as the third opponent, is that everybody's realised this. This is not a revelation from Steve Bunce. This is just a simplification of the ridiculous situation. So Derek will find himself in that position. He'll take care of Pala, no problem. 5, 6, 7 rounds. He's a perfectly okay European-style contender. Derek will do a job on him, and then Derek will find himself in pole position, along with Deontay Wilder, along with Tyson Fury, along with David Haye, if he ever returns, along with David Price once he gets 3 wins fighting on the Sourland shows. Trust me, all of those guys are going to get their shots. That's what this is about. It's a perfectly good title fight, European title, and WBC, WBA on the line, and he'll do the business, and he'll do the business in style. Derek Chisora in 4-7, and I tell you what, I think I don't know what the odds are on the individual rounds, but if they're betting about 4-1, I think they're giving away money, the bookies.
Derek Chisora in, let's have a look here, in rounds 4, 5, or 6, is 9-4, so that's just over 2-1.
There we go.
For all those, you can go a bit wider than that, and you can have in rounds 1-6, in the first 6 rounds, that's only 6-5, around the 6-5 mark. But yeah, the bookies pretty much agreeing with you, Buncey, I would say.
You know, there's nothing wrong with Pala, okay? Mm. But Derek's moved to a different level. He's gone toe-to-toe with Helenius, who's still unbeaten for the European title, in the guy's hometown. Mm. He walked it, didn't get the decision. He's given Vitaly Klitschko his hardest fight since Vitaly lost to Lennox Lewis a decade ago. He went toe-to-toe with David Haye, you know, and that was a pivotal round, the round that ended. If Derek survives that round, perhaps he wins. It's that type of fight. He went in with Tyson Fury, was well overweight, and still was there. You know, no. Tyson Fury never dismisses Derek Chisora, and Derek Chisora never dismisses Tyson Fury. Of all the slanging and all the trash talking that goes around, you won't find those two ever bad-mouthing each other. Yeah. Don't worry. Derek Chisora, whether you like him, and most people don't, is a top heavyweight at the moment.
Also on the undercard, there's a couple of other good fights as well. Some more super middleweight action. The vacant European title, Frank Buglioni and Stephen Horvath taking on each other there. And Bradley Skeets fighting Colin Lyons for the English welterweight championship, both on BoxNation. We haven't got odds on those, Buncey, but they sound like a couple of crackers.
Yeah, listen, the Bradley Skeet, Colin Lyons thing is very interesting. It's a real junction fight for Bradley Skeet. He's been itching, he's been ready to go. And Colin Lyons, well, I tell you what, Colin Lyons was written off before he'd even arrived. People had been dismissed. I can remember being on ringside. That's how long ago I'm talking about. And talking about Colin Lyons and saying, I'd just like to see a little bit more head movement. He's a little bit stiff and upsetting the people that were around him. And that's got to be 11 years ago. You know, he's gone into people's backyards to win titles. However, I just feel that, listen, I think Bradley Skeet, because he's such a nice guy, and because he's got loads of rounds under his belt, people tend to dismiss him. I like Bradley Skeet. He's getting a bit of power. Wouldn't surprise me here if he gets to Colin Lyons late in the fight.
Mm. Let's have a look at the big one this weekend.
Yeah.
This is a great fight. Adonis Stevenson fighting Liverpool's Tony Bellew for the WBC light heavyweight title. Adonis Stevenson, 22 wins, 19 by stoppage. Lost once. He was stopped himself against...
Darnell Boone.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, thank you very much, Buncey. In the second round, a few years ago now, in 2010, I mean, more recently, of course, his eye-catching performances, he avenged that defeat, and then he beat Chad Dawson with that unbelievable stoppage in the first round, and then Tavoris Cloud retired in the seventh round. Tony Bellew, we've seen a lot of him, haven't we? He had that every now and again, he chucks in a bit of a shocker, if you like, and the Isaac Chalemba fight was that one. He avenged that one straight afterwards. Yeah, the second one wasn't great, was it, when he got through it? Has he bitten off a bit more than he can chew here, Buncey? We all like Tony Bellew, but this guy can destroy people, can't he?
The thing that's interesting here is that 5 of Bellew's last 7 fights have been 12 rounders, and most of them have been been forgettable. But that doesn't make him a bad fighter. Tony Bellew is well-schooled, and he's big. He was a cruiserweight as an amateur for a million years. Remember, and I've got to be honest with you, Lee, if he doesn't get hit on the chin, right? Mm. And which he is shown he knows how not to be hit on the chin when he fought Chalemba, when he fought Belonti, when he fought Overeem McKenzie. He didn't get hit at all in the winning fights. If he boxes, makes it boring, makes it dull. I think he's literally too big for this guy. This guy 9 months ago was a super middleweight. He only moved up and challenged Chad Dawson because he'd been waiting for Carl Froch for about 18 months and things kept falling through to challenge for the super middleweight title. Froch, quite understandably, saw that there were bigger fights out there, Kessler, and the thing, the George Groves thing was brewing. Bear in mind, George Groves came up almost straight after Froch beat Kessler back in May, something we forget about, by the way. It was a long, long time brewing last Saturday's fight. Stevenson gave up on that, moved up, okay, well, it wasn't an underdog, and caught Dawson cold. Mm. Now, what I'd like to say here is that I would dismiss everything Stevenson has done, even up until Dawson. That was a lucky big shot. No problem. That can happen. We know he can bang. He was a coiled spring that night. It took him about 2 hours to calm down in the ring. However, the really impressive win on Stevenson's card, the record, is the last fight, the destruction, the shutout destruction of Tavoris Cloud. And I'll tell you why, and it's quite simple. Okay, did Cloud in the seventh. Cloud's a big light heavy. And 3 months ago, if you put Cloud and Tony Bellew in the same ring, Cloud would have started as the favourite, a heavy favourite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think he just would be better than Tony in every region. However, I don't think Stevenson is better than Tony in every region. I think Tony's got a better boxing brain. I think Tony's got a terrific chin. I think Tony can bang. I think Tony's bigger. Okay, the key is that Tony needs to be busy. If he goes out and trades, he'll get knocked out by Stevenson and we'll start claiming Stevenson as some great fighter. He's not. He's a 36-year-old who didn't do a lot against good, decent fighters at super middle, just kept bashing them on the chin. And then he moved up and he landed a shot that transformed his life. And then is the important fight when he bashes up Cloud. Bellew's got all those rounds in the bank. 36 forgettable rounds against Chalemba and Belonti. 12 rounds against Overeem McKenzie when he gave a masterclass in using the ropes and going backwards. If he boxes like that, Tony, and makes it boring but stays busy, he's going to come out of there with a decision. If it goes into anything even mildly like a slugfest, then it's a 90-10 in favour of Stevenson. So it depends on what Bellew does. Bellew talks about dying in the ring and being carried out on a stretcher and in a coffin, and then he goes in the ring and goes on his back foot. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see him do. I want to see him box. I want to see him use his head. I want to see him thinking. I want to see him using tactics. He hasn't got to prove anything about his guts and his chin. He's got to prove that all those years when he was a top amateur, all those years that he's been a top domestic fighter, he's got to prove he's learned something. And all those 12 rounders, he's got to show that he's picked up enough stuff, enough brains. He is that much better than Stevenson in almost every department, apart from maybe single punch knockout.
Mm.
If he goes out and performs to half of his top ability, he'll win. Unfortunately, I don't think he'll do enough. I think it'll be an ugly fight. And I think that in the end, Stevenson will just get a decision that is horrible. It could be tight. It could be close. But here's the thing. If it's tight and close, and you're explaining that afterwards, then you haven't done enough in the ring.
Yeah. 8-1
for... As simple as that.
8-1 for a Bellew points victory, 4-1 for a Stevenson points victory. So both have got a bit in them. Stevenson by KO is odds on. So that's what the bookies are thinking will happen.
Well, I don't see that. We've made Stevenson into a monster.
Yeah.
Tony's been out there a long while. He's seasoned. I see it going the distance, and I just think Tony will just not quite do enough. Against Chalemba in the first fight, what was going on? John Conti at ringside was asking that question.
Mm.
What's he doing? So you can't come out of a 12-round fight, right, unless your eye's hanging out, unless your jaw's broken like Ricky Burns, and you can't come out of it and then start talking about how easy you won it when you're not breathing. You can't do that, Lee.
No.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's immoral. Mm. It's for fighters to finish 12-round fights without marks on their faces and then complain about the decision and say I could have gone another 12 rounds. That is wrong. So let's see Bellew push it to the edge, put his foot down the last 3 or 4 rounds. He can do enough to win. I just think it'll be Stevenson, who's on a high, that just takes a decision. I'd be surprised if it's simple. I'd be surprised if it's a wide decision.
You can get around like the 9-5 mark, so a bit under 2-1 for it just to go the distance. Whoever wins, that's not a bad bet in itself, is it? Really?
No, it's not.
Not bad at all.
Not.
Also being shown, we won't go into this fight, just to mention it, there's a little bit of a link here. Sergei Kovalev is fighting as well. I think that's being shown on Sky.
And obviously, Marcelak, yeah.
The link is obviously between Tony Bellew and Kovalev is Cleverly, who has has pulled out of his cruiserweight debut with an injury. It doesn't look good for Cleverly, does it, still? There's something niggly there, isn't there? It hasn't got much luck, and nothing seems to be going his way at the moment, does it? I'm surprised he's boxing on after that last his interview that he gave after that last fight.
Yeah, he's better off Cleverly just wiping out 2013 and coming back next year. He can find what weight he's going to be at. Yeah, listen, I'm a big Kovalev fan. I did think Cleverly would use his brains and beat him, but he didn't. Yeah. You know, which just goes to show what I've been saying there about Tony Bellew. Anyone can get knocked out. You haven't got to prove your heart and your guts. We know you've got good hearts and guts. You're at this level. So, listen, and Silak is a decent fighter. I've never been overwhelmed by him, but he might just have something inside his head about Kovalev. You know, it's Soviet bloc against Soviet bloc. Yeah. You know, he may not be as, you know, in fear and frightened of him as the rest of the world seems to be. However, you've got to fancy Kovalev. I'd just like to see Tony just do a little bit more. Just do a little bit more.
Make that next step up.
Don't take any risks. Just do a little bit more. Three extra jabs around. This guy Stevenson, he's not. We're making him into some kind of beast. He's not.
Yeah, fingers crossed he does that. Should we do this again next week? Buncey, Darren Barker, Felix Sturm, and Lucien Bute versus Jean Pascal, which is intriguing, if a little scary from Bute's point of view. But we'll have a chat about all that next week.
Brilliant. Lee, thanks, mate.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.